You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 527 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live from State Farm Arena. You can probably hear a little bit of background noise here, but my apologies on that. Short of getting in the Wayback Machine to our roots and recording in the arena after the game was complete, a little bit later here than normal, and actually kind of quiet around here, honestly, after the game because of the fact that the Hawks play again on Sunday, so not a whole lot of overhaul has to be done, just some cleanup and stuff around the arena, and here we are coming to you live from my seat high atop the court and all that fun stuff. So the Hawks lost to the Charlotte Hornets by a final score of 129-120 in this game. We will talk much more about that contest in a few moments, but I do want to lead off with a couple of things on the buyout questions that I've been getting about Dwayne Devin and Jeremy Lin. One thing that I think I mentioned actually on the most recent podcast episode that I did after the deadline on Thursday, I will apologize now. I'm not sure that was my best work on Thursday night. It was definitely a very long day. I had some travel beforehand and the deadline and a long night of games. So my apologies. Not the greatest podcast in the history of this particular show. But just to sort of clarify a few things here, there were some people talking about the fact that basically no teams wanted Dwayne Dedman in my mentions today. I wanted to at least address that. Teams definitely wanted Dwayne Dedman. That's not really up for debate, to be honest with you. Dedman was someone who teams were calling on all the way to the bitter end. The thing is, it has to sort of check a lot of boxes to make a trade happen. You have to be able to match salary for a team. The Hawks have to not take back long-term money without proper compensation to do that. The team has to need Dwayne Dedman as well. And almost it's sort of under the radar thing, but teams also understand that there were a lot of buyout big men available potentially. So it kind of has to sort of fit the timeline perfectly, fit the rebuild aspect on the Hawks side, and also fit into a team's thinking in terms of cap space and all that fun stuff. So it makes a lot of sense. In some ways, I do think that all things considered, it was a surprise to me that Devin was not traded, but it wasn't a full-blown shock, and that was the reason why. Just quickly, I think I mentioned this on the most recent podcast, but Chris Kirshner of The Athletic spoke to Devin on Thursday night and referenced the fact that Devin is trying to stay in Atlanta. He's actually sort of relieved about that. He has every reason to be, considering he has a contract incentive that will pay him about $900,000 if he makes 41 starts. He's well on the way to that, barring injury, so that's a reason, as well as the fact that he's playing a very prominent role for the Hawks this year, whereas in most situations that he'd be going to, I'm not sure he'd be starting. He would certainly be in the rotation for basically any team in the league. He is that good of a player. With that said, I'm not sure he would be starting on most of the playoff caliber teams that will be looking to add his services. So just keep that in mind when you're talking about Dwayne Dedman. One more thing. Jeremy Lin was not quite as committal in a piece. That was also Chris Kirshner of The Athletic on Saturday. He didn't necessarily say that he wanted a buyout, but he was not willing to go into the specifics that Dedman was in terms of wanting to stay around. I actually thought it was pretty interesting in some ways. I'd recommend reading that piece from Chris Kirshner. Some pretty insightful comments from Jeremy Lin. He has much more incentive to want a buyout, in my opinion. There's no contract stuff where he wouldn't want a buyout necessarily. Also, he isn't playing nearly as prominent of a role as Dedman is. He is a pure backup on this team. Trae Young is the guy, obviously. And Lin actually had a pretty decent game here on Saturday that we'll talk more about later, but in the recent past hasn't been playing quite as well as he was earlier in the year. So wanted to at least mention that. Lin's someone who, at his age, he's actually made a bunch of money, whereas Dedman really hasn't made that much money in his career. Obviously, it's a lot of money relative to regular people, but Lin's made a little bit more money than Dedman has, and I think you might want to sort of have him go to a playoff-caliber team for this little run here, probably showcase himself a little bit more, because it'd be different if the Hawks were playing him a lot, but with Young healthy, there's no reason to think that that's going to be happening anytime soon. So Lin might have some incentive to want to buy out. Nothing on that, particularly in terms of specifics, necessarily, but Travis Schlenk was quite clear in his public comments on Thursday that I played some of those for you on the podcast earlier this week. But he has no intention of approaching players for a buyout, but he would have the discussion if a player initiated that conversation, and Lin might be able and might be willing to do that. So obviously we have about 3 weeks left. As long as guys are on the roster elsewhere, off the roster by March 1st, it's one of those things where they could certainly come on. So it doesn't have to be right away. That's some of the misunderstanding that I think I've seen somewhere on Twitter, is that the Hawks don't have to make that decision just yet. Near does Lin's camp. I think it'd be wise for Jeremy Lin not to want a buyout unless he knew he had somewhere to land also. Obviously, Lin is better than a lot of backups, most backups in the league, but you kind of want to have that perfect situation waiting for you to approach a team with a buyout. So a lot of moving parts. We'll talk about that more later on if it comes up and back into the news. One more thing here before we get to the actual game itself. A bit of a bizarre call-up of Jalen Adams today for the Hawks on Saturday. Not a huge thing. The Hawks announced on Saturday morning that Adams was going to be recalled from the G League. He's the backup point guard, of course. The third-string point guard who's on a two-way contract out of St. Bonaventure. But shortly thereafter, they ruled him out with an ankle sprain. No real reason for the Hawks to call him up if they knew he wasn't going to be able to play. So it looked on video as if Adams suffered the injury in the final seconds of Erie's game on Friday night. So probably a late night atmosphere there. Perhaps they told Adams that he'd be coming back up regardless after the game, or the injury was not quite as bad as it was today when they made that decision. So no big deal, honestly. They're just kind of burning a day off of his two-way eligibility and probably giving him a little bit more money, because guys, when they're in the NBA, are making more money even on two-way deals than they are while they're in the G League. So something to keep in mind there. But just sort of an odd situation. I got a couple questions about that, kind of the timing as I tweeted those things kind of almost back-to-back, that Adams was coming back to Atlanta and then he was out, ruled out. People were asking me why that is. I don't really have a real reason for you. I have some educated guesses in terms of the fact that I'm not sure the Hawks were at least 100% sure that he was going to be out for this game when they recalled him, but that's definitely not confirmed. Just me kind of reading between the lines a little bit and trying to deduce what transpired here. So after this very short break, I will come back and talk about the actual game that transpired here, but please take a moment to subscribe to this podcast. Please take a moment to check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, whether it be NFL, NBA, college sports, all that fun stuff. We should have a podcast for you beyond this one, but hopefully this one is your podcast of choice. You can tell your friends about that. Subscribe via a number of platforms, and we'll be back again right after this break with more Hawks Talk. All right, and we're back here to talk about the game itself. Obviously, given the score, 129-120, you might deduce that the defense was the problem in this game, and it certainly was, and that began from the very top of this contest. In fact, Charlotte put up some comical numbers in the first quarter. Spoiler alert, a 46-point first quarter from the Hornets, and honestly, they could have had 50 pretty easily if they had continued to sort of push down their throats down the stretch of the first quarter. An 11-2 run by the Hornets to open the game, including a trio of threes and a dunk from Cody Zeller. The Hornets made their first 8 shots, including 5 threes, to take a double-digit lead in the first few minutes of this game. There was one brief run from the Hawks. It was a 6-0 that actually included back-to-back dunks from Kevin Huerter, which definitely goes against the narrative that some people have that he's not this great athlete. He's a very good athlete, had 2 very nice dunks in that stretch to kind of key the Hawks in 6 straight points. But overall, the theme in the first quarter was Charlotte's offense. They were 15 of 18 from the floor and 7 of 8 from 3 in the opening minutes. They scored 39 points in the first 8 minutes and 44 seconds. That is outrageous offense across the board. The Hawks did counter sort of kind of went small a little bit down the stretch of the quarter, and Alex Len didn't play the whole first quarter. They went with a Spellman Carter front court. A 9-2 run from the Hornets to go up by 16 pretty late. There was a Jeremy Lin buzzer beater to get the Hawks within 15 at the end of the first quarter. And honestly, offense was pretty good for the Hawks with a 120 offensive rating, 50% from the floor in the first quarter. But the defense was just atrocious, honestly. You know, some of this is Charlotte shooting the ball over their heads. They definitely did cool off after this to a certain degree. But in the first quarter, the Hornets had a 92.4% true shooting. That is unbelievable. They were 18 of 24 from the floor and 8 of 11 from 3. Kemba Walker, Jeremy Lin, and Marvin Williams all had double figures in the first quarter. They had a 179.2 offensive rating for a full quarter of NBA basketball. That is impossible almost. So, as always, it's a sort of a combination of bad defense and good offense. Charlotte had to make a lot of shots. But as Lloyd Pierce said after the game, pretty much repeatedly, They really didn't make the Hornets feel them. That was kind of the theme that he was trying to come across in the second half. After the game was over, about the Hawks' defense throughout this game, is that they were not aggressive on that end of the floor. They let Kemba Walker and company get comfortable, and Pierce was pretty adamant that was the reason why they lost this game, and he was probably right about that. It was a defensive flop from Atlanta from the opening tip. Honestly, the second quarter opened up with a little bit of positive mojo for the Hawks. There was a 7-2 run to get the Hawks back within 10 points after Alex Len checked in for the first time early in the period. There was a Marvin Williams monster dunk that had me fall out of my chair almost on press row. I'm definitely a pro-Marvin person in the media, but at the same time, Marvin was great in this game. That was a pretty throwback effort from him getting back in the Wayback Machine with a big-time dunk, so shouts to Marvin. There was an 8-2 run by Charlotte to go back up by 17 at 59-42. The Hawks did finish strongly, though, with a 10-2 run to close the half with a big three from Trae Young and a big three from Torian Prince down the stretch of the first half to get the Hawks back into within striking distance. They were only down by 5, actually, at the break after being down by as many as 17 early on. So that was a nice little flourish, basically the opposite of what happened on Thursday when the Hawks played well the entire first quarter and had a really bad end to the entire first half. This time the Hawks played terribly for most of the first half and then had a really nice strong finish. So it was basically the exact opposite of what transpired on Thursday, but still only down 5. There was reason to be pretty positive, honestly. And Charlotte had cooled off a little bit offensively. Young had a really nice first half offensively with 10 points, 8 assists, and 2 steals. 11 for Kevin Herter, 12 for John Collins. And the offense was very good in general, including a 37-point explosion in the first, in the second quarter. So 68 points, and they were down by 5, which is kind of crazy to talk about. After the half, there was a little bit of a bright spot very, very early on in the third when Trae Young hit a 3 coming out of the gates and then connected with Dwayne Debin on an alley-oop to start the third quarter, and they got within 2. It was 75-73, but from there it was all Charlotte again, back to their old roots in the early part of the season with a less than strong first quarter and third quarter, as the Hornets outscored the Hawks 33-18 in the third period. That included an 11-2 run by Charlotte to go up by 15 points. Kemba Walker hit a 3 on 3 straight possessions. That's going to kind of get you in trouble pretty much all the time. The Hornets scored 95 points in the first 29 minutes. That is a very, very impressive offense. There was a big dunk from DeAndre Bembry off the inbounds pass after a timeout when the Hawks were down by 15, but by the end of the third, they were down by 20 and in serious trouble. The Hawks did shoot the ball pretty well, actually, in the third quarter, but just had 7 turnovers and just kind of kicked the ball around a little bit, and defensively, not a lot of resistance. The Hornets shot 58% from the floor in the third quarter and had 11 assists in one quarter of basketball. Charlotte had just had it all going offensively. There was one nice stretch in the fourth quarter that I actually asked Willie Pierce about after the game. That included Kent Bazemore sort of keying a big-time run. It was a 16-6 run from the Hawks to open the fourth quarter, including 7 from Bazemore and some nice play from Alex Len and Jeremy Lin as well with that unit. Pierce praised that unit for having the wherewithal to get the Hawks back into the game. Bazemore didn't really have it going with his jump shot, and Pierce sort of praised him for sort of understanding that and attacking the rim as such. It was actually a really nice defensive trip from John Collins in the middle of that run where he blocked Kemba Walker at the rim, used his length, didn't foul. It was just a great possession from Collins. There haven't been a ton of those this year. His defense certainly has a long way to go. That was a nice possession that I wanted to highlight on the podcast. Bazemore I thought was great the first, 7 minutes or so of the fourth quarter. That was his best stretch in a while after he's been sort of struggling a little bit after coming back from the injury. The Hawks did get back within 8 points with 5:20 to go, and they had a real chance at that point. They were still certainly a huge underdog given the hole that they were climbing out of, but they had a real shot with about 5 minutes to go after some nice intensity on both ends of the floor. The refs kind of inexplicably swallowed their whistles for a while there, and that probably didn't benefit the Hawks, honestly. Both sides were not getting calls. It wasn't just the Hawks, but there was sort of a weird stretch where there was a lot of fouls called in this game, except for that one stretch in the fourth quarter when it kind of got quiet and they let both teams play. It probably didn't benefit the Hawks too much there, and including a wild putback dunk attempt from John Collins that I thought he was probably fouled on, but one of those things. And then Marvin Williams hit a layup to go back up by 10 late. Kemba Walker hit back-to-back threes with about 3.5 and 3 minutes to go to put the Hornets up by 16 points, and that was kind of the end of that. And offensively, what the Hawks did was impressive, but just not quite good enough in this game. Big picture stuff in terms of the numbers here. The Hawks' offense was actually very good. I wanted to sort of point that out again. Even Pierce acknowledged that as well, but offensively, the Hawks were good. A 121.6 offensive rating is excellent. That's like league best by a lot if you sort of were to take that out over a full season. A 54% shooting clip from the floor, 42% from three. That's very, very good. 26 assists is just fine. Too many turnovers. 18 turnovers is too many, but not like egregious by Hawks standards. Sort of a normal number from the Hawks, honestly, in recent days. So the offense was very good in this game. We'll talk about the individual players here in a minute, but it just in general, score was not the problem, and sort of everyone said that by the end of the game. That was not the issue. Defensively, though, just really bad, honestly. It's one of those things where, again, the Hornets have to make shots, and they certainly did that, but a 130.7 defensive rating is absolutely awful. A 55% from the floor from the Hornets, 45% from three on 42 attempts, 19 makes. They have 30 assists. They had 3 guys go for at least 24 points, Jeremy Lamb with 24, Marvin Williams with 27, and Kemba Walker had 37 points in this game. Walker was fantastic. This is sort of an aside that's a non-Hawks thing, but Kemba is just breathtaking to watch when he has it going. He was plus 15, and again, they won by 9. Whenever he left the floor, Charlotte sort of floundered without Tony Parker, who was injured in this game. They had to go to Devontae Graham. It was not quite the same, obviously, but Kemba was the best player on the floor by a wide margin. He was fantastic and hit a couple of just ridiculous shots in the fourth quarter. He hit 9 threes in the game, 9 of 17. So, yeah, sometimes the opponent just has a better player than you have, and that was the case here for Kemba Walker. So, you know, all things considered, defensively, kind of a disaster. Offensively, pretty darn good, and that's the result of a 9-point loss for the Hawks. Moving on to the individual parts in this game, as we always do on the podcast, off the bench, definitely a hit-and-miss situation. The two bright spots, I thought, were Jeremy Lin and Kent Bazemore. Lin was not great all the way through the game, but he had a couple of really nice stretches of the contest. 13 points, 4 assists, 2 steals, and a turnover for Lin. Sorry, and 2 rebounds as well. 5-9 from the floor, 1 of 3 from 3. He was part of that big stretch in the fourth quarter that allowed the Hawks to get back into the game. I thought Lin was pretty solid. He struggled a little bit in the first half, I will say, but still, I thought he was pretty solid across the board. Bazemore, sort of the same thing. I referenced this before, but I think he has not been playing particularly well since he came back from the injury. That was probably his best stretch of the post-injury stint when he played great in that fourth quarter, and the Hawks definitely needed that performance. It's one of those reminders where he's the best wing this team has on a regular basis, at least right now. But Bazemore was really good, 13 points, did have a rebound, an assist, and a steal and a block along the way as well. It was plus 4 in a game they lost by 9 points. I thought Bazemore was pretty darn good in an overall sense. Justin Anderson played one possession of defense, so we'll kind of gloss over that. He was plus 2, which is kind of funny. But Alex Len was kind of neutralized in some ways. He actually had great stats, 7 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, and a block shot for Len. He was on the floor with Len and Bazemore in the fourth, and Pierce shadowed those guys out, as mentioned before on the podcast. Len was kind of just, they wanted to shadow him with Biombo in this game for the most part. They definitely had the game plan seemed to be that Len was going to be the 11th man, and he kind of acted as that in this game. They were trying to go small and switch a lot, especially in the first half, and they went away from him. But when he played, he was actually pretty darn good. Vince Carter was a quiet night for Vince, 4 points, 2 or 3 from the floor. Didn't take a 3, which is definitely weird to see from Vince Carter at this point in his career, but it kind of a quiet night for him. Bembry was also quiet, aside from the one thunder dunk that he had. It is very clear in terms of minutes recently that it's been Prince and Herder playing the lion's share. Bazemore played more in this game because he had it going in the fourth, but before that, they were on track to kind of, both Bembry and Bazemore kind of be in that 15 to 17 range in terms of minutes. Bembry was pretty quiet as a result. Amar'e Spellman kind of struggled a little bit in this game. It wasn't like he was terrible, but 2 points, 0 of 3 from the floor. Those were all threes, 2 of 2 from the free throw line. Had a rebound, but back-to-back games now for Spellman, which he just didn't really have it going offensively. Defensively, he brings some energy, but also gets lost regularly. He's a rookie. It's just one of those things. But the last two games, he had a huge game against Washington on the road when Collins got dinged up and had to leave the game. When Spellman played 30 minutes and had a double-double, 16 and 10. Since then, he was 0 of 4 against Toronto, 0 of 3 against Charlotte. And that just hasn't done too much to possibly contribute on the offensive end of the floor. To the starters in this game, in general, the Hawks were, again, good on offense, and they had 6 guys in double figures. The one guy who was not double figures in the starting lineup was Torian Prince. 7 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and 4 turnovers for Prince, and he was minus 9 in 27 minutes. You know, Lloyd Pierce actually got a question about Prince's performance and I guess the way it was framed was Prince's struggles, and he didn't like that characterization. He said he thought that Torian was fine. I disagree with Lloyd on that one. I think part of that is probably him getting his back of his player. Lloyd Pierce is not someone who's going to come out in the postgame and say critical things about his players. I think I could count on one hand the amount of times that he's actually been pretty critical of individual players in postgame addresses, so I was not surprised to hear him sort of brush that off. I thought Prince was pretty bad in this game. Part of that is just his general weirdness on defense. It wasn't all him by any stretch. The defense was kind of everybody. We'll talk more about that later. But Prince struggled defensively. He struggled offensively with his ball stopping. 4 turnovers and 2 assists is not too great. Took a couple of bad shots. Wasn't like comically inefficient at all. Only took 7 shots. It wasn't like he was just killing them in terms of the way that he played. But I thought particularly in the third quarter when the Hawks fell flat, he was a big reason for that. And I thought Prince was just, he struggled in this game. That's going to be being candid about that. And, I get what Pierce is trying to do there, getting his guys back. That's the right move probably in public, but I will disagree in that. I don't think he was fine in this game. Elsewhere, Dwayne Dedmon hit 4 threes. That's definitely the positive for Dwayne. He continues to just fill it up from 3. He came into this game shooting 38% from 3 on 3.3 attempts per game. That goes up after this. He's been awesome as a shooter throughout the season. 14.7 rebounds, 3 assists for Dwayne. I thought he was pretty solid, honestly, in this game. Obviously, no one had a great defensive game, but I thought his offense was, very valuable in a big way, and it was just a solid game from Dwayne all told. John Collins, 21 points to lead the Hawks in scoring. No surprise there. 5 rebounds. His rebound numbers have been down recently. Pierce talked about this before the game, but I guess Collins has been getting more double-teamed in terms of just double-team boxed outs. Teams are definitely trying to keep him off the glass, and rightly so. That's the move against a guy like Collins. He's been incredible on the glass. In fact, only had one defensive rebound in this game. That's definitely surprising to see and probably a little bit troubling, but on the flip side, the Hornets just made all the shots in this game, so there were not that many defensive rebounds to go around, and that's worth pointing out as well. I thought John was pretty solid, even though he had 4 turnovers and 5 fouls. You know, he kind of just did what John Collins does and was effective in terms of his efficiency in this game. The backcourt was impressive offensively, to be sure. Kevin Huerter, 17 points on only 9 shots, 3-3 from 3, 7-9 from the floor, 4 rebounds, an assist, and a steal. I mentioned the 2 dunks, but also, obviously, it's good to make all 3 of your 3s. Huerter was very effective there. A couple of those were in garbage time, or at least semi-garbage time late in the fourth quarter, but still, he made them, and his shooting is not really up for debate. At this point in time, he's an awesome shooter. Elsewhere here, you know, defensively, it was not great for Kevin or really anyone. Trae Young, same thing, 20 points, 11 assists for Trae, 2 steals and 4 turnovers. So a really nice offensive night for Young, 8 of 15, I should say, from the floor, 4 of 6 from 3. You know, pretty solid, pretty productive. Obviously, 20 and 11, you can't really ignore that kind of production from Young, and that is worth noting. I will say, defensively, though, he struggled mightily. It was, again, not all him by any stretch of the imagination. This is not me killing Trae Young's defense. It's kind of a problem. It's going to be a problem moving forward. It's not really anything breaking news there. I did ask Trae about the defense in an overall sense. Well, I'm not sure I did. Somebody asked, but Trae, I was standing right in front of him when he said it, but I'm going to read the quote to you. He said, "I don't think I did a good job of talking and getting everybody where they needed to be. I've got to be better at doing that. We'll get better. I'll get better." End quote. It was good to see Trae take responsibility for the defense. It was, again, not his fault necessarily. I got a couple questions about the fact that he isn't necessarily the defensive captain the way that he is offensively. You know, point guard offensively is responsible for getting guys in place. Defensively, it's more of a big man role in some ways, so I'm not sure that necessarily plays in the quote, but worth pointing out. You know, Trae, I thought, was not necessarily worse than normal defensively. He struggles for the most part. Obviously, when you're going to ask him to guard Kemba at times, that's going to struggle in a big way. He's not great defensively against anyone, and then you have Kemba cooking. That's going to do him no favors, but it was good to see him take responsibility, I will say that, for the defense, but it was not his fault, all told. He's not good defensively. That's not going to change anytime soon, but worth pointing out. And again, offensively, he really had it going and was probably the biggest reason why the Hawks were good offensively. You know, Young creating a lot of space. His passing continues to be absolutely elite, and he scored efficiently in this game. So he continues to really be good on offense, and defense, we'll just kind of see how he progresses down the stretch of the season. So all told here, it's not an embarrassing loss for the Hawks. Defensively was not great. There was a long break between the end of the game and when Lloyd Pierce talked for the second straight night. I think he was definitely frustrated, visibly so, with the defense, and he's right to be frustrated. That was a really bad defensive performance from the Hawks, but if you're trying to be positive, and you know, I like to at least throw something in the positive out there on the podcast, the offense was very good. And if you take solace in that, that's probably good. It kind of feeds into the narrative for the last, you know, 26 games or so. The Hawks are now 12-14 in their last 26. The offense has been really good over that stretch, like, you know, middle of the pack in the league, which is, again, really impressive for a team like the Hawks. But the defense has been really bad the whole time, and this is not going to help that, obviously. So all that to say, you know, 9-point loss here. The Hawks have a very quick turnaround as they will be back in this building on Sunday at night with a 7:30 game, a rare 7:30 Sunday night game. So that has to do with Orlando, who actually played earlier today. They're playing right now as I record this, or at least close to it. They were actually winning on the road to Milwaukee last time I saw, which is kind of crazy. But that's why the Hawks couldn't play the afternoon game on Sundays, because Orlando has to travel in from Milwaukee, and that accounts for the 7:30 tip-off. So we'll be back here. I'll be probably in this exact same spot on Sunday night to talk to you again about the Atlanta Hawks. So please stay tuned for that. That'll be the next time you hear from me. We'll be after that contest, and we'll set up the rest of the week moving forward. All-Star Weekend is coming, and that's a week from now. So that'll be fun to cover and all that fun stuff. So please subscribe, please tell your friends, and we'll see you guys tomorrow night.